Today's daf in Masechet Yevamos is daf kuf tet vav, and we're going to begin the new perek with the special words. Not bad. So we have our next perek ha'isha. We already had our first perek ha'isha, and the first perek ha'isha was talking about where Adim came and told her about the death of her husband. And here we're talking about a case where she herself went overseas with her husband, and she comes back and reports that her husband died. Can we believe her? Now, we already accessed this Mishnah before, and remember that we had a halacha mitoch chomer shichmarta aleha besofa, hekalta aleha betchilata. Since we made such draconian consequences in the event that her husband would turn up, so we were able to be maimin this woman, and the chachamim were actually mati her to get married. Now the question is, what if there were extenuating circumstances where for the woman we have reason to believe, as opposed to the situation with the aid, where the aid has no vested interests in this? In a case where we do have a reason to believe that we should not trust her. Now, I mean, what about the draconian consequences? Well, there's two possibilities. One possibility is that, and this is very common, that the situation is such that it's 99.9% sure in her mind that her husband is dead. And she says to herself, look, I mean, if I tell these rabbis that there's even a small chance that he's alive, you know these rabbis, they'll make me crazy. I'll never be able to get married. They'll destroy my life. I don't believe there's a chance of a snowball in hell that my husband's alive. I'm not going to tell them about that small chance. I'm just going to tell them my husband died. So now the question is this. If the situation is such that there is a good reason for us to suspect that she would say that to herself, and she would say, look, I mean, there's no chances. And she sees her husband taken off in a transport to Auschwitz. Everyone else from the town was killed. She doesn't know whether her husband was killed, but it's 2 years later and her husband never showed up. So she's obviously going to say, I saw my husband die. You just say, my husband died. So that's one issue that may make the situation a little bit iffy, because she has grounds to trust the fact that her husband died. Now, remember, it isn't that we're saying that those grounds are not correct. It isn't that we're saying that there is not a 99.9% chance that the husband died. What we're saying is that 99.9% is not a reason for us to change the halacha. We're able to say that we will believe her, but not if she is not going to be telling us the absolute truth. She's saying her husband died because she assumes her husband, she thinks she's telling the truth. There's no inyan of edus at all, right? So we can't believe her in that case. If an eid echad comes and says that, that's a different situation, which we'll discuss later on. Would an eid echad also be led astray by assumptions? The other issue, which gives us pause, is what if we know that she hates her husband, and that therefore, in the event that he comes back alive and she has to suffer these draconian consequences, she doesn't care. She's desperate to get away from him. So if she's got an option to say that he died, this is a great opportunity. He's dead and gone. What can I do? Poor boy. So therefore, we have to discuss these two possibilities. Says the Mishnah that in the event that a woman, and we have no reason to believe that there were extenuating circumstances which would have caused her to be certain that he had died. So there was no war that they got caught up in, as far as we know. Shalom, and the shalom ba'olam, and the shalom b'ino levina. We never saw any kind of indication that these people are fighting with each other. They seem to be a perfectly normal married couple. She comes back and she said, on that basis, in the same way that we believe the Neid Echad, we believe her. and she continues to say, or if she says mate Bali and she has no children and there is a brother, she can also say mate Bali to allow the brother to be miyabim, and she should be mityabemet. But suppose they may be perfectly happy together in that shalom beinu leveina, but they went into an area where there's a war, there's a milchama ba'olam, or vice versa. They are fighting like cats and dogs, and the world is at peace. Then if she comes back and she says her husband died, she's not ne'emenet, because we are worried that she's desperate to get away from him in the event that they've been fighting. And we're worried in the other event that they're at peace between themselves, but there is a world that is at war. So there they are in Ukraine. And imagine, here's the situation. So the Russians hit a shopping plaza. Her husband was in that shopping plaza. She was out in the parking lot. Her husband never comes out of the shopping plaza, and many other people have been killed in the shopping plaza. The building has collapsed. Nobody knows what happened. She's going to say to herself, look, so many people were killed. If he was alive, he would have been there for me. Obviously, he died. So she says, he was killed. Does she really know that he was killed? No. So therefore, in that case, we cannot believe her. Rabbi Yehuda says, even that's not enough. We only will accept what she says when we see evidence that she really and truly believes that her husband is dead and she's mourning him. So lo'olam eina ne'emenet elim kein bata bocha u'begadeha kru'in. So there she is. She's coming in a state of complete mental disarray. Her clothes are in disarray. She's obviously just been through hell. She says, my husband was killed. We need that corroboration before just the fact that she says her husband died. Amrulo say the Chachomim, no, makes no difference. Achat zo ve'achat zo tinaseh. We don't need that type of corroboration. Now, first, the Tana says that only if there is shalom ben olavina and shalom in the world, then we'll believe her. And then he says the opposite. He says only if we know that there's not shalom ben olavina, there's ktata, or that there's not shalom, there's milchama, then we don't believe her. I mean, make up your mind. Which one is the obvious? No. The Tana says shalom ben olavina because he is saying that is the assumption unless we know otherwise. He said that Tana shalom ba'olam mishub dekabayla misle milchama ba'olam. It's only because he wanted to introduce the Mishnah where we know otherwise. But that was certainly lav dafka. Now, what is the reason for this? So Amar Rava, my time at the milchama, why would we doubt her? Mishum de amra bididami. It could be that she would just make assumptions because there's good reason, such good reason for her to say that. Because she says to herself, Salka Daitach Bakol Hani Dikta Hu Polit, the entire train to Auschwitz was murdered. So what do you think? He was the one guy that got away and jumped the train. Ridiculous. So, okay, but she doesn't know. So Im tim tsaloma, kiven de shalom beino leveina natra adachazia. So you would say, but wait a minute. I mean, we know that they've had a good relationship. So wouldn't she stick around to see whether he is dead or alive? Not necessarily. Listen, imagine a situation like this. Her husband has been hit by a bullet. He's in bad shape. He's wounded. She's there out in the middle of bombs falling, bullets flying, and what is she supposed to do? She's supposed to stay there and lean at his side to be with him as he dies? No, she runs away and she assumes that basically he's dead. So over there, even if you'd say to yourself, I mean, look, if they're getting along together, would she not wait to know for sure? No, because what if he was hit by an arrow or by a grenade? And she assumes, look, he's definitely dead. I mean, what's he going to live another 5 minutes? And I should stay out there on the battlefield to get myself killed as well? But the truth is that ikada avet samtere v'choya. There is definitely a possible way to save the guy. I mean, I have no idea. You're telling me it's impossible that somebody came out and grabbed him, and he was the one guy that they actually were able to cure. They use these medications that are able to prevent. Maybe they had antibiotics. Nobody else had. I don't know. So I cannot be cynic on that. It's not the equivalent of seeing him dead. So Rava held that the same thing would be true if we're talking about Ra'avon. So let's say the guy is dying. He's on his last breaths. He hasn't had anything to eat. They're starving. And Rava says that's different because she would wait for him to die. Why would she leave before he actually dies? We don't say just because it's reasonable to assume that someone is not going to be able to live long, therefore she's going to leave him alone. Why would she leave him alone? But in the end, Rava changed his mind, and he said the truth is that Ra'avon is the same as a milchama, and the reason that he changed his mind is because he had a actual event that happened that taught him that he was making a mistake. Because there was this woman that comes to Rava, and she said, Ba'ali mate bira'av, my husband died in the hunger we were caught in. I managed to get out of there alive. So Rava, in order to test her, he says to her, you did the right thing. You know, you got out of there. You didn't sit around because, I mean, 100%, what were you going to do? You were going to feed him another couple of ounces of some flour that you had. That was going to save his life. Ridiculous. Better that you got out of there while you could. Maybe those 10 minutes were enough to save your life. Now, obviously, he said all of that to see what she would respond. So he says to your shopper, you saved your life, you did the right thing. I mean, really, could anybody think, well, you think you had a little bit of flour left that you gave him, you think he could have lived off of that? So she said to him, I see. What an amazingly intelligent man you are. You understand that, of course, he wouldn't have lived, and so I had to leave him. So then he understood that, no, you can't trust these women for nothing. They'll leave you on your deathbed. Forget about it. So he no longer accepted that kind of. So then Rava said, actually, once that's true, then hunger is even worse than a situation of milchama. Because by a milchama, if she would have said, listen, we were in a war zone, but my husband had a heart attack. He died in his bed. We weren't attacked or anything. So in a milchama, where she would say, Meit Ba'ali b'milchama, there she's not believed because she's so likely to assume. But if he said he had a heart attack and we died, even though there was a war going on, well, how does the war influence his heart attack? In the case of a Ra'avon, she would not be believed unless she came and she said that Metu Kvartiv, he died and I actually buried him myself. Because actually, she is not going to talk about how he died in the war because she knows deep down, as we'll see, that she's making an assumption. So it's going to be, as we'll see in a moment, it's going to undermine her. So Masha Enkein, if you're talking about Ra'av, she has no reason to worry. She's not worried that the guy's going to show up, right? Because she's absolutely convinced that he's dead. And so basically she says that he died in his bed. Yeah, great. Did she bury him? No. So if she says she buried him, then we can believe her. But not less than that. Now, what about other situations? What about a collapsed building, right? Mapolet. So a mapolet is like a milchama, the Omer Bidadami, because it's the same thing. She'll say, nobody else got out of that building alive. He hasn't been seen for months. You think that he got alive somewhere? Shiluach lechashim v'akrabim. That's like a milchama, where people are being killed by dangerous kinds of snakes and so on. Over there, she's going to run. She's going to sit and wait. So that's like a milchama. where she assumes what so many people were killed. He said, that's been a dummy. How about Dever? How about if there is a dangerous plague going on in which people are dying left and right from black plague? Does she sit around or does she run? Amri la hareya ki milchama, vi amri la eina ki milchama. Some say it's like a milchama because she might assume that everybody else died, so he will too. But others say there's another issue over here, and that is the fact that people have weird beliefs. And one of the weird beliefs that people have, as we've just seen recently in the most recent virus, is that people believe the saying that goes, you know, there could be a virus for 7 years, but if it ain't your time, you ain't going to die. So maybe Shev Shnina Vimutna, but Inish Bolo Shani Lo Azil. You know, that's, you know, if you get sick, it's your time anyway. That's all of that is bull, but people actually believe it. So because of that, there she will not have run because she figures, you know, listen, if I'm going to get sick, it was my see people saying this all the time. I can't tell you how many times I heard this during the recent pandemic. Iboilu. So, okay. So things haven't changed. People are weird. Iboilu. Now, the question, fascinating question is, what if we had no idea that there was a war zone where they were? She comes back and she said, we were in this war zone and my husband was killed. Now, it would have been advantageous for her not to bring up the idea that there was a war zone, right? Because in a war zone, we are less likely to believe her because she's Amri bin Adami, as we just said in the Mishnah. So what if she herself was the one who told us that there was a milchama? Would we look at that as a migo, mao? Mi amrinan mala leshaker. So then why should she be saying that he died? She could have just said that he died. She didn't have to say it was a war zone. E boy amra shalom ba'olam. I mean, if she had wanted to, she didn't have to say that. And then we were more likely to believe her. O Dilma. Now, this is a little bit weird. Because remember, we are not concerned that she's lying. The whole point in the Mishnah is she's definitely telling the truth. And that's why we believe her if it wouldn't be that it was a war zone. So the fact that she says it's a war zone is what? What does that prove? That she's not lying. I know she's not lying. But the issue is that we're worried that she's making assumptions. So how would a migo, how would it have anything to do with anything? Migo means that if a person wants to lie, he would choose the better lie that Bezdin is more likely to believe. But where a person is not choosing a lie, what is the meaning of a migo of Mali Leshaker? It doesn't make any sense at all. Something is funny here. So basically, I mean, there's a lot of discussion and different nuances of approaches in the Rishonim, but the underlying Nakuda is like this, I believe. This is what seems to be saying in Rashi, although it's not 100% clear. She understands herself that she has been making assumptions. Now, she persuades herself 100% that these assumptions are true. He's definitely dead. She does not want to get people involved in questions about it because, as we said before, that's why I introduced the Mishnah like that. She knows these rabbis, if they find any reason at all to think maybe it's otherwise, they're not going to accept it. Even though she thinks to herself, they're crazy. What are the chances? Chances are one in a million that he escaped. And she's right. But nonetheless, it doesn't matter. So the question over here is, since she is aware of the fact that she is making a blanket statement that cannot really be 100% said, she's saying, my husband is definitely dead. He's only definitely dead in the sense that we can assume he's dead, not that he's definitely dead, which means he's not definitely dead. So therefore, it would still be, at the very least, subconsciously advantageous for her not to raise any confusing issues. The fact that she goes out and says there was a war means in her mind, they're going to start asking questions. They're going to wonder whether I really saw him dead. And therefore, it serves as a MIGO, not in the normal way of Mali Leshaker, I'd rather say another lie, but rather it serves as a MIGO in the sense that it establishes a level of realism in her ADAs. She apparently wants to give us the situation. So therefore, it should be an indication of her being more likely to be telling the truth. Odilma, or should we say, look, the bottom line is that we have the right of a chazaka. It's an assumption, a presumption, really, that she is going to say what appears to her to be true on the basis of the chance in a million that it would be otherwise. So once that is correct, it's not going to be enough to fight it off with this additional insight into her being an honest woman and giving us the facts. Not enough. So kiven de ichaska amra b'dadame, you cannot use, we're borrowing terms here, remember. And some of the Rishonim have even speak it out beferish. These are borrowed terms. This is not a normal migo. This is not a normal mali l'shaker. That's the point. So a mali l'shaker does not come to undo a chazaka, which is true, la'alacha. So we should look at this, at the proclivity of the woman to make assumptions as a chazaka, Baruch Avram. And we should look at this mali l'shaker as being no better than any other kind of mali l'shaker, and it's not enough to undo that chazaka. What's the halacha? Toshma. Okay, let's take a look at the braita. Woman comes, and she said, the Nazis burned down the house around us. Ishnu aleinu abayit. Ishnu aleinu ma'ara. We're hiding out in the cave, and they threw grenades and smoke grenades into the cave. The whole thing was with, there was no oxygen. He died, and I was saved. So it says over there, she is not believed. Now, that seems to be the equivalent of, she was the one who said there was a milchama ba'olam. I mean, we didn't know anything about this attack on their cave and anything. She was the one who brought it up. And nonetheless, it says, ain't on them in it. So she didn't have to say all of that. She just could have said, my husband died. By giving us all of this information, she made it less likely that we would believe her. And in fact, we don't believe her. Says, no, that's different. Because over there, she essentially is saying, I got out of there alive. Exactly. Did you wait to see if your husband is dead? No, I ran. Exactly. That's the point. You ran. So look, my lady, would you have said, if somebody would have asked you whether you're going to be able to survive an attack like that, you would have said you would survive? No. Would your neighbor have thought you came out of it alive? No. So basically, the same way you're telling me it was a miracle. Exactly, it was a miracle. Those kind of miracles happen all the time. If you were saved by a miracle, he could also have been saved by a miracle and in all of the confusion and so on, ran away somewhere. And now he's hiding out in some kind of pit from the Nazis and we have no idea where he is. So don't tell us that he's dead. That's different because she is admitting that she didn't stay around. I mean, that's the whole story. We couldn't breathe in there. We ran. Exactly. That has nothing to do with the case we're talking about. Okay. Look at the next case, Tashma. She says we were attacked by Nazis. Or, Naflu aleinu listim. We were attacked by a band of robbers. The pirates. And he died and I was saved. So over there, she is believed. Now, I mean, we wouldn't have known. The pirates! The pirates! No, we wouldn't have known until she said it, right? And therefore, that's basically milchama. So she's saying there was a war, her husband died, and we assume that what she's saying is true, even though she might have been Amar B'Dadami. And it says that we do believe her, so why would we believe her? Apparently because she's the one who told us about this mini-war. And that is a raya that she's telling the truth? No, that's not why. The reason over there is because we have no reason to suspect that in that kind of war that she would be making assumptions that he died. Look, when you're talking about a war, there's bullets all over the place, bombs blowing up. She says, my husband died. We really think is that she ran. Well, of course she ran. She's not going to sit there. Masha Inkin, in this kind of war, this is a mini war, right? So here, she's not going to run because of Rav Edie. Rav Edie says a woman is not afraid that she's going to be killed because she always has sex. And therefore, she can always save herself. Isha klei zeina aleha. She carries around her weapons with her. So basically, she does not think they're going to attack a woman. So normally, what, they're going to shoot a woman? Why would they shoot a woman? Exactly. So therefore, she does sit around to see whether he is alive or dead. We have no reason to assume that she was Amra bint Adami. That's the whole point of Rav Edie. We have no proof. Okay. There was another crazy story. How about this? This is a proof. I think there was a guy where he was at his own wedding and the wedding hall blew up and the people were burning. Everybody ran out. And there he is, under the chuppah, on fire. And his wife is looking from the outside, oh my God, look, he's burning like a torch. And she's pointing to her husband, who's on fire. Omelu Davidu, Chazu Gavrai, my husband. Anyway, they come in afterwards, and the body is completely charred. They have absolutely no way of knowing who this is. They find a charred body, unidentifiable. And there's a piece to the other, the Shadya. There's a hand that has been burned off. Maybe from this body, maybe from somewhere else. Anyway, and it's a little bit further away. So Reb Chiya Bar Avin said, okay, I mean, this is the case of they burnt us out, isn't it? And we said that we don't believe her. We said maybe same way you got out alive, maybe he got out alive, and maybe this is somebody else. Says Rav, I mean, it's not the same as the case of the Ishnua Bayit. I mean, in this case, she had identified him before he was charred. She said, look, there's my husband burning. Look, so she's pointing to him. And we also, in this case, we have a charred body that we have to account for, don't we? I mean, in that case, we don't have any reason to believe that someone was caught in the cave. We don't have any information. This happened 5,000 miles away. We have no idea what she's talking about. But over here, we see that there is a body that has to be accounted for. So in this case, why would it be the same? Indeed, Reb Chiya Bar Avin, why does he think it's the same? I mean, so what does he think happened over here? No, Reb Chiya Bar Avin says, look, I mean, the fact that you've got a charred body proves that what? That this is her husband? That her husband didn't escape? I don't know. People might have come to rescue them. I mean, look, the bottom line is the way some of the Rishonim learned that this is the story of the hand that's on the side. Apparently, there were other people there who were killed in this fire, were dragged out, whatever. I mean, otherwise, how do we account for the hand? Or others say, no, the hand was meant to come from the charred body, and it explains why the husband, or a possibility of why the husband would have run away, maybe comes from somebody else, from him. A lot of different approaches to this hand. So actually, the fact that we see this piece to the yada, that could be because it was actually in the bombing. It came off of the guy who was coming in to rescue them. And as far as the husband is concerned, you'll say, so where's the husband? That's no question. So again, some learn that maybe the hand was the hand of the husband, but the husband didn't die, which doesn't add up all that great if we're talking about a nura and not bombs. That's why I said it was bombs. But I mean, Rashi says, no, there's no way he could have been burnt to that extent and still survive. In any event, either the way Rashi understands, he was disfigured so badly by being burned, he had no face left and he could not show himself. So he just disappeared. Maybe. I don't know. I mean, ask me why a guy disappears. I mean, there's plenty of reasons why a guy would disappear under these circumstances. So maybe Isyalid Bey Muma, Umachmat Kisufa, Ozovarak, but I don't have to account for his missing body by saying that this must be him. I mean, there certainly is a reason to either the severed hand itself, which would be his hand, or the fact that she said he was burning, so he was obviously desperately injured. Okay, so we don't have a riot from here. Now, we say that when it comes to milchama, we don't accept the woman because we are concerned he's amar bit a dummy. The whole Mishnah before that was talking about aid erchot, we never raised that question, which is interesting. I mean, do we have any chashash that an aid would also be amar bit a dummy and that he should be less ne'aman in cases where, in fact, there was a milchama? So what would be the din, asks the Gemara? How about the halacha that we've had all along about an eid echad? Would it change if it was a war zone? I mean, is the point over here that an eid echad is meheman, is really based almost entirely on the fact that something, remember this is how the Rambam explained it before, something that is going to come to light is not something that we need to aid him for, Midiraisa. And that, in fact, over there, the truth is that if there's an impossibility to assume that he's going to be Meshakir, we would accept even Midiraisa and Eid Echad. So maybe that's the entire idea. Mishum demilta David alagluyehu lo Meshakir. So achanami lo Meshakir. Or remember that we had the issue in the Mishnah. We said the reason that we're ready to believe this Eid Echad is only because of the draconian consequences. In this case, the draconian consequences in the Mishnah gave us assurances that the woman is going to make absolutely certain what happened. And therefore, we're sumich on her investigation. But the whole point in our Mishnah is that we are not sumich on a woman's investigation in the event that we're talking about a case where there was war, because there she's liable to jump to conclusions. In which case, it's all very nice that the Eid Echad won't jump to conclusions, but he doesn't have this woman's investigation that we can rely on, so maybe that was the main issue. Oh, Dilma, time at Eid Echad, Mishum Dehigu Fadaiko Minsava, we always trusted her to do proper investigations, and in this case, we just said, we do not trust her over here because of her jumping to conclusions. Amarami Bar Choma, I will give you a raya about what the din is from the Mishnah later on. Tashma, Amar Rabbi Akiva, when I went down to Narda, and I had to go down to Narda in order to be, in this case, there was no one in Eretz Yisrael that was Kamohu, and therefore he was the one that was going to make it into a Shanamu Uberet. So he went to Narda over there, that they had there the Bezdin. Fine. So there was a Gezerah of the Malchus that this couldn't be done. This was during the Roman persecutions, and it couldn't be done in Eretz Yisrael, so you had to go down to Bava. So when I went there, I find this guy whose name was Nechemia Ish Beit Deli. And he told me, I've heard that in Eretz Yisrael, that they do not accept an Eid Echad to marry a woman. So Shamati, She'in Mesi'ina Ta'isha Be'eretz Yisrael Al Pi Eid Echad, the only one who does that is Rabbi Yehuda Ben Bava. But none of the other Chachomim rely on that. And I said to him, Namti Lo, says Rabbi Akiva, I said to him, you're right. That is actually the situation. Keina Devarim, Amarli, so he said to me, okay, now you listen to me, man. You tell them in my name, Amarla Amishmi, that, and you know, Atem Yodim Amidina Azomishubeshet Begayasot. You know that we are in very bad and dangerous war zone. Now, we're going to see why he said that. But we're assuming right now that he said that as part of the halacha that he was trying to give over. So you know that right now we're in desperate straits around here. And nonetheless, I am telling you, Rabbi Akiva, to tell them that kach bekublani mi Rabbi Gamliel azaken shemasiin isha al pi eid echad. Now, why do you think that this Nechemia Beit Deli mentioned that this is a terrible security situation and we're surrounded by dangerous people? I'll tell you why. Lav avagav demidina zomishubeshet. Wasn't he trying to say, look, you see the situation, right? Nonetheless, I'm telling you that we will marry a woman al pi eid echad, and we will not be cheshish that we can't believe in eid echad under these circumstances, even though we have reason to doubt the investigative powers of the woman. That's what he seems to be saying. Kach mekubla nishemisina pi eid echad. Anyway, alma eid echad is mehaman, even in a state of war. Amar Rava, why would you read the words that way, okay? He didn't say the world is at war. He said, you know that this country is in bad shape. What does that have to do with this country? If he's coming to tell him halacha, why did he mention this country? Don't be silly. All he was trying to say was, and why do I, Nehemiah from Beit Ali, why do I not go and tell you myself? And why am I sending this Rabbi Akiva guy? That's what he was coming to explain. So therefore, says Rav Amishna Mendinazo, he could say, Koma kom sheyesh gayasot kach mekublani. But what he was saying was this, atem yodim shemedinazo meshubeshet begayasot. Listen, I cannot leave my family behind. There's nobody to protect them. There's nobody to give them guidance. I have no idea what's going to be. I cannot leave. Lo efshar li lemishpakin shebeiti umayti kamei rabbanan. Otherwise, I would go to Eretz Yisrael and I would personally testify. I'm sending, therefore, Rabbi Akiva as a shliach. Kach mekublani mi Rabbi Gamliel shemisina yisha al pi eid echad. That's all that he was trying to say. Okay, let's see if we can bring a raya from the Braita. Tashma. A Braita said like this. There were two Talmidei Chachamim. They're on a boat. And they were together with Abba Yosi ben Simoi on a boat and the ship sank. The Tav'a. Rabbi allowed their wives to get married based on women who saw these men, their husbands, drown. Now, mayim is certainly a good reason to assume that someone is dead. The guy disappears, never shows up again. The assumption is that he has drowned. Baruch Avram. So, it should be the equivalent situation to milchama. And women are an eid echad. No matter how many nashim you have, they have a din of an eid echad. And we're ready to accept them. He went ahead and he had these women marry based on an eidus of an eid echad. Ah, come on. I mean, you can't be that simplistic. Vitisbara. I mean, you think the Braisa is talking about where all they said was that he drowned. Mayim she'ein lam sof ninu. The case over there was that they were in the middle of the ocean. This observation by the other women was observation from another boat. They're in the middle of the ocean. There is no land around. That's called mayim she'ein lam sof. Mayim she'ein lam sof does not have to be in the middle of the ocean. It's just far enough that no matter which direction you look, you do not see land. Now, since it's Mayim She'en Lahem Sof, there is no way to know that this person did not go out of the range of your sight and then climb up on an island somewhere, rescued by a helicopter. You wouldn't have seen it. So therefore, we cannot believe them anyway, because the normal halacha is, if it's Mayim She'en Lahem Sof, it's always Osir. She's not allowed to remarry because just the fact that he disappeared doesn't mean that he didn't make it out and that he was underwater until he got out of range of sight. So then what must it be talking about? It's talking about over there. You don't know the rest of the story. The women said that they recovered the bodies in front of us. And as soon as they pulled the bodies out of the water, we identified them. V'chazinu la'alter, v'ka'amri simonim. They give over various simonim that this woman's husband always had a scar on his left forehead. This guy had the scar. He looks like the husband. And therefore, we're not being semich on them. We're being semich on the simonim. Now, this is the big day for all of you guys who like to play Sesame Street. So, at last, we have our revenge. Because this story took place on Sesame Street. And what happened was, a guy gave sesame seeds to a friend and told him to take good care of my sesame seeds for me. He comes back sometime later, and he tells the guy, who is a grouch, and he says to him, I want my sesame. Have please the shumshime. So the grouch says, you took them back. I don't have them anymore. What, says the guy? What are you talking about? This was exactly 500 grams of sesame. I put them right there into that barrel. Now, if you'll go over there and open the barrel, weigh the sesame seeds in there, and you will see it's precisely the 500 grams of sesame that I gave you. Says the grouch, yes, you did give me that, and I gave it back to you. And then I went out and bought 500 grams worth of sesame seeds and put it into the barrel. So you're right, it's there, but it's not your sesame, it's mine. So, this is exactly the same situation as the two chachamim on the ship. Rebbe said that if we pull the body out of the water, we have these two bodies, that they were the ones that had fallen into the water, and that we can marry the women based on that. And we did not say, no, these are two other bodies, and the two husbands, they are somewhere else. What are you talking about? We said that the case over there was that they identified the bodies, for God's sake, and they gave over the simanim, right? I mean, sesame seeds have simanim? What kind of simanim are on sesame seeds? So it's not the same at all. Now, I mean, the very fact that he said it was an exactly half a kilo of sesame seeds. Oh, come on, man. Everybody buys sesame seeds by the half kilo. So what would that prove? So if it's a Omar came to Ain Gavia, this is what it was. That could be. It just happened to be that they have the same amount of sesame seeds that are there. Now, the fact is that in the Gemara, there are cases where we do take the Mishkal, the Midah, the Minyan, as a simon. However, we're mechalik there between norms of selling. So if a guy said a half a kilo, everybody buys a half a kilo. If he would have said, go and measure the sesame seeds, you'll see there's 375 grams of sesame seeds. Now that would have been different maybe, because we have a concept called simanim muvakim versus simanim sheinam muvakim, which is a standard. So, but over here, maybe it just worked out that way. But wait a minute. I thought we never assume that something that we know is there and it has exactly the same measurements and it looks the same as what was there before. We never assume that something else took its place. Remember the famous Mishnah of Maaser Sheni, another moment for Moshe Forman to be joyous. Remember the famous Mishnah, which says that if you find a container that has a kuf on it, a kuf is a normal way for people to indicate that something is from a korban. Now, this was all during the times where it was dangerous to admit to keeping mitzvahs. So therefore, people would be careful not to write the word korban or not to write the word truma or whatever, as we'll see. And they would put one letter. That's the standard use of the letter kuf. Kuf is a korban, mem is a meiser, dalet is dimua, so it means it was truma that was mixed with chulin. Tet stands for tevel, tuf stands for truma, and this was because b'sha'ata sakana hayu kotvim tuf tachat truma. Fine. So we do not say if we find something in there that no, this is not truma. It was once truma 25 years ago. Somebody put truma in it. And now it's been used since then, who knows how many times. Why would I assume that a tuf is truma? So obviously when we find something, when it's identified, we assume that the identification applies to current inhabitants. So the same thing you're being drove a year. Why should we believe the guy to say he took out the sesame seeds and he put in other sesame seeds? Omele Ravina Ravashi, that is absolutely not true. Excuse me. Will you please read the rest of the Mishnah and then ask your questions, okay? Rabbi Yossi Omer, Afilu Matze Chavit V'Chatuv Alav Truma Rei Elu Chulin, Sha'ani Omer Eshtakad Avim Ole Truma. Last year it was Truma. So last year it was Truma. This year it's not Truma. What does that have to do with it? So you see that we are concerned that he's going to actually have a new one. Same thing over here. We are concerned that the guy is right, the grouch, and he took it all out. So what you can say is actually that there's not a machlokas in the reality. Everybody agrees that chashin and shema pinan, there's always a chance that it was removed. So what then is the machlokas? The machlokas is whether we can rely on the fact that if a guy would have taken it out, the Tanakhama is simply saying, why in the world would you have left a tuff on a barrel of chulin? You don't want people to confuse it with truma, right? So you would erase the tuff. And therefore, imita de pino, if you had replaced the truma, michpar avikov, you would have rubbed it out. Whereas Rabbi Yossi says, no, on the contrary. I want to create a panic by people thinking that it's truma, and therefore they won't steal it. So it's a security item. So Rabbi Yossi says, look, it's possible that he just forgot he intended to rub it out, but it's also possible that he nami lepankhia shavke, left it there to create the panic that maybe it's truma. And that way people will be reluctant to steal it. They don't want to get involved in a chiyav misa of a zar being ochel truma. So I left it there to scare people away. That's all. Actually, it was a misa where Yitzchak reish galut, and now he happened to be the bar achte, the Rav Bibi. He was a nephew of Rav Bibi. This Yitzchak, whose name was Yitzchak reish galut. And he was traveling from Kortova to Aspamia. And he died on the way. So anyway, they sent a message. Now, this message is very confusing the way we have it and is almost 100% the wrong Girsa. The correct Girsa should not mention Bar Achte de Rav Bibi. So Sholchu Me'atam, they sent this message to the place where he had come from. So they sent it from Aspamia and they sent it to Kortava. That Sholchu Me'atam, Yitzchak Reish Galuta, leave out this piece of Bar Achte de Rav Bibi, was on his way from Kortova to Aspamia. He died here in Aspamia. And we want you to know about it. So now the question is, Michashina Latre Yitzchak, might there be two Yitzchaks by this name? Oh no. Abaya says yes. Rava says no. We do not have to worry about that. We only know of one Yitzchak Reish Galuta in Kortova. And that's all we need to worry about. And he must be the one that died. Omer Abaya, I will prove it to you that we do have to worry. There was a get that was found in Naharda. And in the get, it said, next to the city of Colonia, Betzad Colonia Mata, Anna, I, Mr. Andrelinai Naharda. So Mr. Andrelinai from Naharda, have hereby patrit v'tarechit yat planita intate, and then he has the girsa of the get. I did hereby release and send away my wife, so and so and so on. And so Shmuel's father sent this question to Reb Yudin Nesia, and he asked, do I need to make absolutely certain that there is no other Mr. Andrelinai from Naharda? I don't know of any. So Reb Yudin Nesia sent back to him, well, do a search on Naharda, the entire city, and see if anybody knows of any other Andrelinai. If there's no other Andrelinai, you can give the get. So you see from here, says Abaya, that look, they didn't ever hear of anybody else named Andrelinai in Naharda, and nonetheless he told them to like, you have to look. Rava Amar? Rava says what? You think he was really worried about it? So if he's really worried about it, why does he only need to check Naharda? Maybe Mr. Andrelinai the second from Naharda has moved to New York. So why don't you have to look through the entire New York for Mr. Andrelinai once of Naharda? What good is searching Naharda? So imita yibade kololami boile. Reb Yudin Nesir should have said, okay, first check the whole world, make sure that there's no Mr. Andrelinai that ever lived in Naharda, And then you can give her the gets. Obviously, he wasn't really trying to search for him. He felt bad that Avua de Shmuel wrote him something stupid. Because, of course, if you don't have any chazak of anyone else there, and the guy is called Adra Lanoi, you know of Adra Lanoi, so you have a right to be samech on that. So Rabbi Yehuda Nisiyah felt bad for him. So what's he going to say? Dumb, dumb. No. So he writes Avua de Shmuel, okay, check it out, and then give the get. But obviously, he wasn't really checking it out. It was just said to be nice to Avua de Shmuel. Omar Rava, now I'm going to prove to you, Abaye, that actually we have no such chashash, okay? Because there were two shtarot on a loan, and they were actually brought to Beis Din in Mechoza. Now, you won't believe what it says over there. It said over there, one of them was with the name Chavi Barnani, and the other one, Nani Bar Chavi. Now, that sounds funny, doesn't it? But not if you know how many Nanis and Chavis there are in the whole town over here. That was the most famous name in Mechuza. It's like Muhammad, the Arabs, Nanis and Chavis. Okay, so you'd say, so if you've got a shtar of Nani Bar Chavi and Chavi Bar Nani, I mean, you'd say, come on. I mean, prove to us which Nani Bar Chavi you are, right? And no, Rava went right ahead. Rava Bar Avua went right ahead. And he used it to collect money with, and he didn't say, we have no idea whose this is. And he actually, he was collecting money on this basis. Now, I mean, Chavi Bar Nani and Nani Bar Chavi in Mechuza, that is the most popular name, Shchichei Tuva. Okay, so then how do we know that they were the real lenders? So I tie it to you that if we're talking about in Yonei Momonos, that we're going to be Motzi Momon Michazaka, even though we know that there's people that have this name. Maybe plenty of people. So in a case where you're talking about Isser, where we do not know that there was other people, shouldn't that be the same, basically? And what would Abaye say to that? Abaye would say to that, I don't understand. What does that have to do with it? The guy is holding the shtar. Why would we not collect the shtar that the guy is holding? What are you afraid of? That the shtar fell and that another Nani Bar Chavi or Chavi Bar Nani picked up the shtar? In the fila, people are very careful not to drop blank checks, for God's sake. This is a blank check. You're going to be chayshish for a blank check? Mizar ziriba. And what are you worried about? That maybe it's the real Nani Bar Chavi, please stand up. Did you give this shtar to Nani Bar Chavi number two to keep for you in safekeeping? What would his response be? You think I'm nuts? I'm going to give a shtar with my name on it to somebody with the same name for safekeeping. I mean, that's like trusting the cat with the cream. No way. So, of course, we don't have to be chayshish that he gave it to the same guy. Ila pikadon. Nobody's stupid enough to give a pikadon to someone who has the same name. Given the shmei kishmei lo mafkid gabe. So the only thing you have to worry about is what? That maybe the real Nani Bar Chavi gave this to Nani Bar Chavi the second and told him, my dear friend Nani Bar Chavi, I, Nani Bar Chavi, would like to give you a gift. Or I, Nani Bar Chavi, would like to pay you back some of the money I owe you with this check made out to me, but fortunately you have the same name, so you would have no problem in presenting it to the bank, and I hereby give it to you. Okay, is this what you're worried about? That that's what happened? Maybe it did. Who cares? If that's what happened, you'll say, oh, but he just gave it to him. He didn't make a proper kinyan. You don't need to make a proper kinyan because the halacha is, mayamar dima masalei, that's no problem. Biz otiyot niknot b'mesira. Information in a contract can be handed over without further ado, and that is all that is needed for the kinyan. So if the original Nani Bar Chavi did that, then the second Nani Bar Chavi is indeed allowed to present this at the bank, which is exactly what he did. And therefore, I say there'd be no problem in that case. So you can't prove anything from it. Mashain came over here. You'd have to establish that this guy is really the guy that we assume he is.